Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today's episode number 177 with Stephanie Vaughn.
And crypto is like the Wild West, and it's every country all the time. Nobody takes weekends off, nobody takes even nights off. Like, you could, it's insane. And it's awesome because you get to meet with people from all around the world at all times a day. But
Well, when I sent out my newsletter to the Beyond the Uniform audience, one of the most requested types of interviews was with people in blockchain, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, you name it, anything related to this whole new field. And I have to be with you on that one. I'm very fascinated by this. It is, as you will learn in this interview, the Wild West. It's pretty crazy. But it took me a while, but was able to track down Stephanie Vaughn, who is in the blockchain space. In the capacity, as you learn, there's lots of different ways to do that. She's more in kind of the service provider support area of helping companies that are in this space. And I have to have a lot of empathy for her because I feel like her and my friends who are in this space, it takes a lot to explain what they're doing to me. And I've been out for 10 years, went to business school at Stanford, I've been working in the business world, and it's still hard for me to get my head around. And so to try to explain that to an active duty audience who may not have any business experience, it's just an order of magnitude more difficult. So I just want to really appreciate Stephanie for the extent to which she was able to really break this down in a way that I found accessible, and I think that many listeners will as well. Even if you're not interested in crypto or blockchain, I think this is a great interview to listen to because, Stephanie talks, especially at the end, about taking risks, about going down a path that not a lot of people have gone down. And she also talks about something that comes up quite a lot, this whole piece of being able to advocate for yourself and the difficulty she felt and the roadblocks that she felt when she was selling herself in interviews and things like that. And I relate, and I would say at least half, if not two-thirds of everyone I interview says the same thing. And I think she's got some great advice there as well. Stephanie mentions a couple resources. All of them will be in the show notes for this episode at beyondtheuniform.io. So you can not have to worry about that if you're driving or running or, jumping out of a plane right now. One quick plug, if you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, there's three things that would mean the world to me if you do any one of these three. The first is there is a donate button on the site at beyondtheuniform.io. All of this is done. It does cost money. That comes from my pocket, and so it'd be great to offset that cost. Second, I'm lining up sponsors to support the show with advertisements. If you know of anyone who wants to either hire or get in front of an active duty and recently transitioned military audience thinking about their next career, let me know, send me a note, and I will send them more information. And then lastly, if neither of those apply, if you could just share this with your friends, post it to Facebook, social networks, or wherever your military friends are getting their information, would love to get more exposure. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Stephanie. Well, joining me today in New York City is Stephanie Vaughn. Stephanie, thank you for joining me and welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And so for listeners, I wanted to give an abbreviated background for Stephanie. She is the vice president and head of capital markets at BlockX Ventures, which is a premier boutique crypto agency advisory firm. BlockX Ventures supports leading blockchain companies worldwide, serving as a strategic and financial advisory for token-generating events. She started out at the Naval Academy, after which she served as a Marine Corps officer for over 5 years. After her military service, she earned her MBA at Columbia Business School, worked as an investment banking associate at Houlihan Lokey, a venture capitalist at LunaCap Ventures, and as director of capital markets at StreetShares. She is also a contributing writer at the Blockchain Times. So Stephanie, maybe first off, apart from a blatant mispronunciation, anything you want to correct or amend from your background there?
That sounds right. It's Houlihan Lokey. I don't know. Some people know it as it's a boutique investment bank in New York. It also is kind of a very old name.
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let me just actually start off because you're so gracious with your time. It is almost 10:30 at night in New York right now. And is this a typical day for you? Is this because you just came from another meeting, and so is this representative for you?
I think this is obviously a little bit later than normal, but I'd say in New York, there are meetings. I mean, I guess when I was an investment banker, I worked till like 10 or 11 at a minimum each night.
Wow.
And then came home. But like, as far as phone calls, normally I wouldn't take them. But in New York, I feel like you often like have meetings from, you know, or dinners or drinks or meeting with clients, you know, 8 to 10.
Wow.
Or 8 to 11. Yeah.
Well, let's start with the basics. So let's start with where you work. So if you were talking to someone who's still on active duty, how would you explain to them the gist of what Block X Ventures is doing?
So I'd say Block X Ventures helps companies that would like to raise money in a token sale and have a good blockchain technology use case. So we find clients that I guess I'd say something along the lines of, I mean, it's hard for everybody to understand the different levels of fundraising, but you raise in startups, you raise Series A or seed and then Series A and Series B. And I'd say we look for companies that are probably at the Series A to Series B point, and they're looking to raise that next level of funding. So 15 to 30 million on the higher end, maybe 40 or 50 million. And they believe the best way to do this is through a token sale. And that is the best way to do it because it's a good use of blockchain technology. Hopefully that's simple.
Yeah, enough. I'm just realizing as you say this, this is such a different interview for me because I'm usually, you know, a little bit about the field and all of my friends.
It's equivalent to investment banking, maybe.
Yep. No,
think of it like that.
What is it like? You know, I have a few friends who have gone off into this world of blockchain and crypto, and my sense as an outsider is this is the hot industry right now, and this is kind of the darling cutting edge technology. Excuse me, cutting edge technology. What is it like right now to be at the epicenter of what is just in a seemingly exploding industry?
What is it like to be? I mean, it's insane. Like, and it's also more insane because I feel like when I worked investment banking before, I mean, we'd sometimes have, or I had international clients, but I was sort of controlled a little bit. They knew like we were in New York and most of the people we sold to were in America, and crypto is like the Wild West and it's every country all the time. Nobody takes weekends off. Nobody takes even nights off. Like it's insane.
What?
And it's awesome because you get to meet with people from all around the world at all times a day.
How would you explain your role? So you're the vice president and head of capital markets. Set the stage, like how many employees are there? And then what sort of work do you do?
We're a really small group, so we have like 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
George, who I work with, George Popescu, he has another company called Lampix, which raised an ICO as well, the PIX token. And George also has Blockchain Times, which I help write for, even though Alan manages it, and Lending Times. Mm. It's a small team. And then what I like, because I'm head of capital markets, so other parts of the team focus on bringing the clients in and then writing, kind of writing their white papers, helping them get their presentation ready. And I'm sort of like involved in that, but it's not my primary job. My primary job is selling, helping the companies sell to all investors, and then getting, helping them get their marketing set up in order to do their public sale.
And what does that translate to on a day-to-day basis? Like, I know probably every day has a lot of variety, but could you just walk us through a hypothetical day of time stamped and what sort of activities you're doing?
Sure. So I guess I could look at today. I mean, today's a little bit unusual because we have Blockchain Week coming up next week in New York. So a lot of investors sort of worldwide are flying into New York City. And so we're throwing events during that week, and we're actually doing a veteran event for veterans in blockchain, or any veterans that really just want to learn about blockchain, on Sunday night. And then, I spend about a couple hours this morning actually just doing like manual work to sort of finalize the venues that we have. And then I'm doing some of these events with a couple other VCs. One is Lattice Ventures. Another VC is M-State. And then, so I was just working with those VCs this morning, and then we are finalizing like who our attendees are and then what companies are going to be there in order to just like have like the best sort of blockchain event. So that's like, event planning is typically not what I do, but I feel like it is part of every investment banker's job on some level, because you do have to have, you know, dinners or events, and they do need to run right in order for, you know, investors to meet founders in the best way. And then I'd say this, so that's what I spent a couple hours doing. And then I spoke to, two new potential clients. And then I kind of screened them to see if their ideas make sense for their blockchain technologies, and if, you know, really testing the person to see if like this was going to be the right person to maybe use this technology, and then try to see if they were going to make it to kind of the next level in our funnel. So I did two of those calls. They were both half an hour. And then I speak to our clients. We have four main clients right now, and I'm sort of primarily more focused on three. One is a little bit earlier stage. So I'm focused on the three that are about to go to market or do their public sale rather. And they're all coming to New York as well. So I spoke to all of them to make sure that they're getting connected to the right investors, like that they're getting their meeting set up, and that they're like, for instance, like one had a legal question about just like his paperwork, for what he has to have investors sign. So I answered that. Another one, he's sort of figuring out like what sort of token sale he wants to do. And there's a few different types. So he's considering a Dutch auction for his token sale. So we're kind of going through the benefits of doing a Dutch auction versus like selling it, like in a typical sale with discounts. And then how we thought like his sale would sell. Mm. So just sort of, answering those questions, dealing with those clients, managing like upcoming meetings, and and then I went to actually meditation class, and then I had another call with a group of people who are, you know, looking to raise money and trying to put another blockchain technology together, and then got on this call.
I imagine the meditation is a necessary grounding given just how insane it sounds like right now.
Yeah, I was considering, I was like, oh, I didn't think I had time to go, but it was necessary.
So when I had polled the Beyond the Uniform audience, crypto came up pretty high. There were many, many requests for people wanting to learn more about careers in blockchain and crypto. And, you know, to be honest, my immediate response was like, wow, that's just kind of, that's like so extreme for someone to think of going directly from the military into this environment. And I'm curious if you have thoughts one way or the other on, like, if you were talking to someone who was thinking of going directly from active duty to something in this space, what advice would you have for them?
I would say, well, I guess I didn't go directly into this space, and I had like a little bit more finance background, but I'd say a couple things. Like, one, it really is like the Wild West, which I didn't really know what that meant, but it means that basically nobody operates as if there's any rules. So you kind of just have to go as fast as you can. And then make sure you're staying within like the a regulation within a certain country. So for instance, like a lot of the ICOs, like FinCEN came out with a letter, and basically because it's a transfer of money when an American buys a token, you have to be able to monitor the KYC or the know your customer through the life of the token. So in this example, like it basically makes it, it's not an example, I guess it basically makes it impossible for a U.S. investor to invest in a token sale that's not located in the U.S. and will be traded on an exchange that isn't approved by the SEC. And there's no exchange that's approved by the SEC right now. So unless the token's just not going to be traded and it's a U.S. investor, all U.S. investors are locked out of the market. So people in Silicon Valley are going to set up funds in the Cayman Islands as a sort of workaround in order to invest in ICOs. And they basically had to like react overnight and do that in order to like keep like investing in the space. Wow. So that's like maybe seems an extreme example to somebody who's in the military and like is used to following the rules. And you have to kind of be okay with that sort of change and that sort of like ability to like react to different regulations.
I'm having a moment of empathy because I'm understanding like that. I think that, you know, when I talk to my friends about this industry, it is so new, and so having to explain that is an onerous task. But then I can hear the wheels turning as you're trying to explain this to a military audience, which is, you know, it's like a separate language. Like you're translating into terms that anyone can understand. It's not that's not an easy task. I just want to kind of recognize how more so than any other interview I've done, you have a very difficult job of translating this wildly emerging industry into terms accessible from people who may not have any business experience.
Yeah, it's very sort of, I guess for regular business, I'm saying it's extreme. And so I feel like somebody who's in the military, they might see it as very extreme, but at the same time, like the best part about being an officer or enlisted is being able to take like sort of chaos and then put order to it.
Yeah.
So if you're comfortable with that and you sort of like that chaos and then try to put some order to it, it's just like, I think the hardest part, I think someone from coming directly from the military will have like to going into this is, and maybe this has changed like in the last five years since I've been out, or almost six years, but the amount of tolerance you have to have for just different cultures and different rules, and then your personal risk tolerance for, because breaking a regulation isn't the same as breaking the law, and you can take different risk with that. And I think you have to find figure out for instance, can you set up in Singapore and you're following these regulations in Singapore, and then you have to get a bank account, and there's different like banks accept certain things, there's certain laws, and they're all not, they don't always match up, and you have to take certain risk,
Yeah. It's, it is interesting because on the one hand, it seems like a dramatic change from active duty to that environment. On the other hand, yeah, part of what I'm hearing is that, like, in many senses, when someone leaves the military, they're in most industries, they're behind their peer set. But this seems to be like an industry where if it is the Wild West and the rules are being invented on the fly, it might be leveling the playing field. It might be an environment in which someone who comes from military background who may be more comfortable with ambiguity could have a relative advantage. That's one way of looking at it. But I can also see that, you know, at least stereotypically, people in the military follow rules. They're very, you know, disciplined and organized. And if it's an environment where those rules aren't that well defined and you're often following rules of different countries or bending and kind of finding loopholes, that might be difficult for many people in military to swallow.
Yeah, I think that that's well put. I also think, like, I mean, it's not even just people in the military that, you know, struggle with those two things, but I look at my friends in DC versus like my friends in New York versus my friends in Silicon Valley, you know, and
yep.
like each of those groups like treats it very differently. Like there's different risk tolerances in all those cities, you know, for how much regulatory risk like they're willing to take. I mean, Silicon Valley, they're the ones that are setting up their, you know, their crypto funds now in the Caymans, you know, like
yeah.
they did overnight.
Wow.
Didn't even like think about it. But like, you know, New York thinks about it and figures out the best place and where to save the most money and what's the most efficient. And then, you know, DC thinks it's criminal. So like, yeah.
One thing, not to jump around too much, but right before we started the recording, we were just chatting and you had mentioned something which is one of the most raised issues of the 170 interviews that I've done. And you talked about that in your prior to blockchain experience in banking, your experience where the, you know, most people in the military are humble and they don't want to sell. And that's been mentioned in at least half of the interviews I've done. I just love to hear more of your thoughts about that.
Sure. And when I talked about my experience in crypto so far, I mean, I'm talking about crypto as a field and taking those risks. But there's different parts of crypto to be in. You can be a tech person, you know, and build different blockchains and different protocols. Or you could be a trader. There's a lot of traders and they're making a lot of money off of different, you know, arbitrage strategies right now. And just, they're making a ton of money right now because like it isn't so regulated. Or you could be an advisor or an investor So you see companies like sort of from those three lenses. And then, so I'm in the advisor space. And so I did that before when I was an investment banker. And then again at StreetShares where I helped them raise their like Series B. And when I first started at Houlihan Lokey, I think it was very difficult even when my boss would put our pictures in the back of a deck in order to sell our brand. And he'd say, you know, Stephanie has this Marine Corps experience. And I felt like this huge guilt every time he said it. And I said, you know, I shouldn't be using that experience. There's people serving out there. And now I'm using this, like, and I wasn't even using it. He was using it like, in order to sell something. And it made me almost feel sick at first. And it's something where I think I feel differently about it, the longer I've been out, and sort of the more I've transitioned my whole life. But yeah, it's a hard feeling to get past. And I think it's actually, it makes it more difficult for vets to get jobs because they're not used to really like making the best resume. You know,
yep.
Or because they're so humble in different things, or, you know, I'm not going to put any of like my awards on here, or, you know, I'm not really going to explain what I did. And people all like, you know, in order, you know, I'm not going to put that one example because like it's so sort of sacred. And then so, you know, people already have a hard time understanding what veterans do. in companies. So I think they'll have an even more difficult time understanding, like, because veterans are so humble about it. And then if everybody says, you know, oh, a veteran should be, you know, they're great at banking, great at finance. And maybe that's true because they're organized and they're willing to work all night in order to get the job done or accomplish the mission. And I certainly did that, like, my first couple of years. But in a way, they're not really good at it because, like, they're not good at selling, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the primary job. Mm-hmm. You know, investment banking is selling companies, like, it's marketing, and it's marketing yourself as part of that.
I completely agree with what you're saying. It's like I just am feeling a sense of frustration as you say that, because it comes up so frequently. I know I felt that. It's for me, it was an unwillingness to talk about my accomplishments. It was a team. A story that I always think about is in business school. One of my classmates was like, you know, I launched satellites into space, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And then, you know, over time, I learned he was part of a 500 person team, and he was like, five layers away from the person running the team. But it's like, wow, if I told that, I would say I was part of a 500 person team that launched satellites. But this person had no problem saying, like, I launched satellites, and that's going to come across a lot better in an interview. And what I'm aware of is I think you really put that well. Like, what I'm aware of is that the veteran is getting in their own way. Like, they are, I think you said that beautifully. It's like, it's difficult enough for a civilian to understand a veteran's experience, and the veteran is making it even more difficult by hiding their accomplishments and making it difficult to discover those. And I'm just curious if there's anything other than just time and experience, anything that helped you get past that or view it differently or approach it in a way that felt authentic, but where you could advocate for yourself.
I mean, I guess you can always say time and experience, but I'm trying to think of something like an example. I mean, honestly, I talked about doing meditation. Mm-hmm. I think that helped me transition better, because I feel like it creates a better sense of this authenticity in yourself, and you realize that you're no longer like, you know, I feel like the military, and I went to the Naval Academy, so that was kind of my whole experience, like from when I was 18 until I got out in 2012. So I felt like, I mean, there's your whole life at that point is kind of defined by the military. So anything you can do to sort of bring attention to yourself as, I mean, I guess as an individual in a non-selfish way, which I found help in meditation. I think other people could find help in different religions. But it allows you to kind of realize that, you know, you do have this ability, you know, it is you who can sell this.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm not trying to be too philosophical.
No, I love that. My wife and I are heading out in 2 days. We're going for another silent meditation week, and I'm completely in agreement with you. I think it's such a powerful tool and vehicle to try to just get more grounded and understand yourself more. And so I completely agree with you on that. And I like this sense, you know, part of the sense I got when you were talking is it's like, you know, I or any other veteran, when we don't advocate for ourselves, we're doing a disservice to ourselves and also to the military community, like that we're penalizing other veterans who go after us. And if we are able to advocate for ourselves, identify what we want, and go after it without shame or guilt, we're making it easier for the veterans who go after us. And yeah, that's one other way.
And also, I think it's another thing I just realized is when you're in the military, I mean, it is really personal. Like you know, and the people are humble like that for a reason, because it is so much about the team. But I think when you're on the outside, you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter that my boss, I mean, I think that he shouldn't have like sold what my accomplishments, I guess he should have sold what my accomplishments were. You know, he wants to sell the company. But at the end of the day, like, it's not like a life or death mission. You know what I mean? If we don't sell the business,
yep.
You know,
like, yep.
Nothing's going to happen. You know, and so I think it's applying that sort of, you know, thought onto it as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't treat it so seriously at Houlihan, I wouldn't have felt so offended, you know, that he did that. I think if I just treated it as like, yeah, he's trying to sell a company, like, maybe it'll sell, maybe it won't sell. You know what I mean? Like, and he's just, you know, he's trying to do anything to sell it. Like, and this is just business.
Yep.
You know, and business is not the military.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know.
It's like you're playing out of a, and I relate to this too. It's you're playing a game by the rules of another game. It's like you're assuming that the rules that applied in the military and the stakes that applied in the military apply in your civilian field, and it doesn't.
Yeah. No, it's not even just the stakes. Like, yeah, I mean, it's just like, and I guess at first too, I would get upset about if I felt like somebody was in the military and they were maybe not doing everything they could to help somebody else who was in the military to get a job at some place, you know, and I think certainly people should, but I like, you know, I now see that people, you know, get busy now, you know what I mean? And they're not like, you're not indebted to every single person, you know what I mean? That reaches out to you. But before I would be offended by it, you know, and I would, you know, I guess, cause I saw them still like, and I'm talking about people at business school, but I saw them as like my team and they weren't helping. It wasn't that they, you know, they weren't helping this other person on the team, like where I felt like they should be. And now I see like, you know, everybody's just an individual. Like these are just companies, you know, and these companies are going to fire people. They're profit maximizing by nature, you know, like they're going to hire a certain amount of people. Like,
yep.
It's not the military, the mission and the structure is different.
Yep. What about, you know, you had mentioned at the start that you you have this upcoming conference and part of it is for veterans. Is that for veterans who are interested in blockchain or is that for veterans who are actively involved in this space?
It's for veterans. I mean, I think we put it just veterans in blockchain and we just started a networking group and kind of just invited anybody that wants to come.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but it is basically people that are actively involved in this space. So I'll give you all the names. Like,
Oh, yeah. Well, I was asking because
one person has actually worked for the founder of ConsenSys.
Oh, nice. Well, part of the reason, you know, I liked at the start, you kind of explained the different ways in which, you know, you can be building the technology, you can be part of the, I don't know if you call it like support system or kind of,
you could be a trader. I mean, I'd say you could build the technology, a trader or like an investor, an advisor.
Yep.
I
was just kind of curious if you have a sense of the other veterans in the space that you see, are they more represented in one of those categories than another?
I guess, sorry, the fourth thing is they could be in a company. Mm. I'd say most of the veterans, so one is definitely, he works in trading and he went to business school as well, went to the Naval Academy. So he sort of fell into it almost like I did, but on the trading side. Another one, just he worked for the founder of ConsenSys, like I said. So that's, I guess, a little bit different. It's more like working in a company. I'm trying to think. I'd say less around the technology side. But there's certainly, I believe, that any veteran could be a developer and develop blockchain technology, and they can learn about it very easily. Like, even if they're in right now, they can actually go to Hyperledger, and there's a playground that they can download. And they can start building.
That's maybe
so that's the something you can do and yeah to get familiar with the technology.
Yep,
and that's another yeah.
Oh, I was just going to ask like any other resources. So I'll put Hyperledger in the show notes. But anything else come to mind if someone's interested in learning more about this space? Resources you'd want them to check out?
Sure. There's a lot of different newsletters. I don't know, this is sort of general startup, but also like a little bit blockchain. If people read, do people read AVC's blog or Fred Wilson's blog? I don't know if that's been mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll add that in the show notes too.
Yeah, and he's a big investor in blockchain, and he writes about different ideas. And so, I mean, he certainly has a lot of knowledge in this space. There's another podcast called Unchained, and that's another good one. And they just talk about like lots of different technologies. And then there's a book called Crypto Assets. That's more about how to invest in different assets, and it gives a lot of the history too about Bitcoin.
Awesome. Well, I will add all of these resources to the show notes. And I know not only do we only have a few minutes left here, but I know it's also nearly 11 o'clock your time. So just the last thing I'll ask, and I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is, you know, you were gracious in answering a lot of my questions. And I'm sure there's stuff that we didn't cover that you could talk about. And I'm just would love to turn the last one or two minutes over to you, and any final words of wisdom or anything that we didn't cover that you would want to share with an active duty audience.
And this is, I guess, active duty that is just kind of looking to transition or get out, or just wants to know about.
Yeah, most listeners are either active duty thinking about preparing for the transition, or veterans who transitioned in the last year or two and are thinking about what's next.
I'd say I personally like, and this is, I guess, I like being closer to startups or working in startups. And I feel like since I left banking, I felt like maybe a lot of people feel like they get out of the military, they go to business school, and they need to do the next thing. And I felt like that was going to banking, and I thought I was going to stay there forever. But I think I would try to consider if I was getting out, like, again, pushing yourself in order to do something that's not just the regular path, or, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to a big company and work there for the next 20 years after you get out of the military, or, you know, or you can do anything, you know? And so maybe push yourself in order to do that. And like, I think if they're listening to this podcast, that they want to get the different tools to be able to do something like that. So just keep doing it.
That's great. So. That's great advice. Well, Stephanie, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your staying up into the late hours over there in New York, and for sharing your story with our audience.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.